With SDPB News, I'm Jackson Dirks. The State Department of Education found modest successes and areas in need of improvement on the 2024-25 state report cards. SDPB's CJ Keene dives into the data.
The state report card is published yearly and reflects the most recent year of education in South Dakota. The 2024-25 state report cards found students at or above grade level in English rose 1 percentage point to 52%. For math, no increase was tallied and it holds at 44%. This comes as new statewide math standards are under consideration by the Board of Education Standards. While attendance is broadly good at 87%, the state reports a 20% rate of chronic absenteeism. The highest rate of chronic absenteeism can be found in economically disadvantaged students, students in foster care, or students experiencing homelessness. Overall, on-time graduation rates improve more than any other factor. For the general population, students are graduating at the highest rate in a decade. Native students saw a 5% jump in on-time graduation rates over the last year, but still finished their primary education at a disproportionately low rate compared to peer groups. That total does jump for overall graduation rates for every demographic, though, and 91% of South Dakota residents will either graduate on time or receive a high school equivalency at some point. Generally, South Dakota students are moving on to higher education. In 2024-25, 60% of the state's graduates are going on to some form of higher education, be it two-year or four-year institutions. The top destinations for in-state universities include the University of South Dakota and South Dakota State, while the top trade schools are Lake Area Tech and Southeast Tech. Leading the classrooms, South Dakota's 10,600 primary school educators and administrators offer an average of over 13 years of experience for their students, with over one-third holding a master's degree or higher. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is projecting a record corn crop this harvest, largely due to the largest acreage worked in 92 years. With that means more supply and lower prices per bushel to follow. However, lower prices benefit one South Dakota industry, ethanol. While the latest USDA data on corn prices aren't readily available due to the government shutdown, corn yields are expected to be up nationwide. That means corn producers aren't seeing any $4 per bushel opportunities in South Dakota. Phil Madsen is the risk manager at New Gen Energy in Marion. He calls the high corn yields this year a, quote, good problem to have.
Yeah, we'd much rather deal with a big crop than the alternative. We've had a lot of short crop years in this area in the last few years, so it's nice having a big one, but definitely presents its challenges. I think everybody in the area is stressed for space, and us included, so we're doing all we can. You know, we're bins are getting filled to the tops, and we're piling on the ground, so we're trying to stay in front of it.
According to NewGen's website, the company shows cash bids are teetering between $3.50 and $3.70 for this month. While producers would like to see a four in front, for ethanol plants, that's a good price for business. Madsen contends that cheap corn in the area is beneficial, but says they like to help out the people working the land.
But at the same time, we wouldn't necessarily have to be piling on the ground. You know, we're doing it more so as a service to keep guys in the field going, so you know we could shut off hours and shut off trucks, but at the end of the day we like to have good relations with farmers and we're doing all we can to stay in front of it.
Madsen calls it a record-breaking year.
Every year is different, but I think this one's really unique in that it's huge and it's hitting really hard and fast. So
he says he's shocked moisture hasn't been a big issue with the crop despite a wet spring and summer. NewGen starts to discount prices at 15.5% moisture. He added that about 80 to 90% of the corn they've had come through so far has been under that mark. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks in Marion. Governor Larry Roden is announcing his plan to provide state funding toward the Rapid City and Sioux Falls Airport expansions. He plans to bring legislation in the upcoming legislative session to help the growing airports. Governor Roden says his plan provides 0% interest loans of up to $15 million to each airport to support their existing airport expansion plans. Funds for the project would move from the state's Housing Infrastructure Fund into the state's Revolving Economic Development and Initiative, or READY Fund. The state legislature employed a similar funding method to the Douglas School District earlier this year. Funds from the Housing Infrastructure Fund date back to 2020. 2023, when then-Governor Kristi Noem set aside $200 million to support career housing, $100 million in grants, and the remainder in loans. About $65 million in loans remains. Now, Governor Larry Roden says it's time to utilize what's left.
We've made tremendous progress in available career housing across South Dakota, and now is the time for these dollars to be used to solve other problems.
He calls the 0% loans a win-win.
And by providing a loan, this money will return to the fund for future economic development in South Dakota.
State Democrat Representative Eric Mucky represents District 15, which houses the airport. He says this is about way more than his district.
Though this is based in Sioux Falls and Rapid City, those two communities cover the overwhelming amount of air travel for every community in South Dakota. And so when it comes to economic support, economic vitality, and our ability to be connected to the world and have the world connect with us, it's going to be really important for us to say we've been dealing with this project for years. And at some point in time, having some form of solution that is creative enough to help us get to the finish line and sustain that programming and that project for years to come.
Approval must go through the state legislature, who owns the power of the purse. Some legislators looking at property taxes have pinpointed the remaining money in the Housing Infrastructure Fund for property tax relief. Roden says that proposal has no merit because he believes one-time funds can't support an ongoing problem. Former SDPB News Director Ross King died earlier this month at the age of 83. He worked in the newsroom for nearly 30 years. Former SDPB Director of Content Larry Rohr described King as having a distinguished husky voice with a unique laugh. He says before working in news, King taught English.
A lot of the people involved in public radio at the time when I arrived in the late 80s were from that kind of English department and were very, I want to use the word proper, they did things succinctly and correctly, and that was Ross King. But then at the same time, he was this teddy bear guy.
Rohr says King taught him what the public and public media meant, and he appreciated how King would always focus on getting the story right. King covered thousands of stories in his career. His wife said she recalls him covering the Wounded Knee occupation, the Rapid City flood, and even the plane crash that killed former Governor George Mikkelsen and seven others. Larry Rohr said it was a long career that left a lasting impact.
You couldn't rattle Ross King. I mean, he was steady. He was professional, and you have to understand in that time frame that he was with South Dakota Public for almost 30 years, 70 to 99, in that beginning era, he helped shape how this came together because radio as a statewide entity was just beginning to emerge at that time, and he helped shape that.
King died October 17th at Ava's Hospice House in Sioux Falls at the age of 83. A memorial service is scheduled at a later date. Rapid City is accepting applicants for business representatives on the City Air Quality Board. There's one vacancy, and the goal of the board is to keep the community in compliance with the EPA's National Ambient Air Quality Standards. Namely, the board looks to avoid negative health outcomes connected to dust, pollutant, and smoke emissions. To be a business representative on this board, the business cannot have a conflict of interest with those standards. That means it can't be regulated by those air quality ordinances. That means businesses like construction or heavy manufacturing. This is a three-year term, and applications are due November 3rd. Theater 605, formerly known as the Black Hills Playhouse, is holding events to emphasize its expanded programming across the state. The first is scheduled in Sioux Falls on Wednesday at the Fellowship Theater. These events are designed to highlight the group's new branding and an effort to appeal to the whole state rather than just the Black Hills. The group says the new name represents a cohesive identity aimed at helping South Dakotans recognize the organization's impact outside of the Black Hills. Hundreds of pounds of copper risen from a mile underground at the Sanford Underground Research Facility in Lead. It's now on its way halfway across the world in a special steel-lined shipping container. What makes this copper so important is its lack of contamination, described by the lab as, quote, ultra-pure. Radiation is all around us in healthy and normal doses. However, even the slightest hint of background radiation could create interference with sensitive science equipment and experiments like searching for dark matter. This copper was manufactured in the underground lab space, making it uniquely pure for scientific uses. This copper went through months of machining, cleaning, and packing prior to shipping to ensure maximum cleanliness. As the state wrestles with how to approach emergency medical services, a major question is should EMS be designated as an essential service? That would designate tax dollars for the services. The State Emergency Medical Services Interim Study was tasked with answering that question. If so, the biggest question left is how to fund EMS if it's considered essential. Here's a look at that committee's discussion.
Percent of calls I was just going to say, you know, it's the chicken and the egg, and I'm one that believes the egg comes first and then the chicken comes. And the egg is we got to figure out the funding first. If you make it an essential service, it's going to require a lot of money. And you hate to hear the word taxes, but that's what pays for all of our essential services. And so we've really got to tackle that question first. And then once we get the funding down, then, yeah, certainly we can move towards making it an essential service. But
Representative Garcia.
So I think it's a disgrace that it's not an essential service, because if you think about all the towns now that have absolutely no services, and you drive through them, and if something happens, like the gentleman said, you're just pot out of luck. So what will happen? AI. AI will happen. Or your phone, a bot. That's what's going to happen. So it should be essential. We will find the money, and we need to go forward with that idea, because it's not if, it's when, because it will affect everyone in this room, and your kids, and your grandkids, and the kids at school. It's everywhere. So they are our first line of access. I use them numerous times in my three clinics. Without them, people would die. You don't have 21 minutes to get somewhere. You got six, and you got 90 minutes when they get in the door to get them open if they have a cardiac arrest. So we don't have the time. And I just think that it's, if anyone was moving to one of these towns in South Dakota coming in from out, you'd do a business analysis. You'd look at the hospitals, the schools, the EMS system, the grocery stores, and you see who would have the best to live. And that's where you live. That's hence why we have economic development. But I don't understand how we can have all that when we still are sitting here and we can't figure out how to make EMS an essential service. It's a necessity of life. It's like a grocery store. It's like gasoline. So I think it has to be an essential service. We will find the money, and that's the attitude we have to have in this committee, is that we will come up with the money no matter what, because everybody needs it.
Representative Grove.
I am convinced, and I've said this in the very beginning, that people have no idea. They believe just what Representative Emery said, that when I pick up the phone and I call 911, it's going to show up. I believe that. And so I do believe what Representative Garcia said, that we need to find the money. And I think that when people understand that this service can go away very, very quickly, and that it is going away if we don't do something, I think that people will be motivated to figure out how we get the funding. Does it come from taxes? I don't know where it comes from, but I just think that people have no idea the situation that we're in.
Representative Albury.
I really support this idea in moving through. And last night when I read the NCSL report, how they were funding things and creating a law to where insurance had to pay 100% of a service, and then a Medicare had to pay 325%, I think it was, of the deal. And out of respect for Senator Jensen, nobody likes to talk about the word tax. But where is that coming from at the end of anyway? Because if we're creating the law that we Medicare or Medicaid is going to have to pay this, it's coming from a tax that we're paying. If we're going to do this, we don't want agencies to fold up, as Representative Grove is talking about. Representative Call made a great comment about where's it going to come from. And they're going to look to our committee for those answers, because that was our job. And that is the hardest question to answer for this committee, is where, what. And Representative Call made the comment earlier, I'm going to suggest the gas tax. Well, that was made to me by a couple of EMS services, but I don't know what we're going to do, but soon some of these services are going to fold up.
And so here's what I'm thinking with this kind of, because we came in saying we need to investigate making EMS an essential service. I'm afraid that we got to have the conversation for the whole legislature to say, to have that fortitude and said, we're going to set up a committee to make EMS an essential service. That's what it's going to take, right? Because we all know, you know, as we discuss this, we don't necessarily think that there's appetite for different things to do it. And so I know the chicken and the egg, but I think we have to first set it up that this is an essential service, you know, and then we have to work from there. I think that's what we've kind of discovered in all our conversations here. And that's why I think this is a good thing to have on there. And I'm going to talk to Representative Emery, because I know he's had the bill last year and such, about how can we do this. I also really appreciate what Representative Garcia is saying, that how do we look at this? you know, for the who pays. I do think that there's resources that we can allocate into this, but I also know that from the discussions here that there is also some, you know, there probably has to be some financial help through some sort of a methodology of funding. So
the committee ultimately decided to encourage continued dialogue of EMS as an essential service. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks, and that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SDPB News and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. And as always, thanks for listening.